Well, here we are. It's Good Friday. It's Good Friday 2014. And we are gathered here in this most beautiful place, this physical sanctuary of love, to think together very deeply. To think together very honestly and very openly about what it would mean to live from an inner sanctuary of love. What it would mean to meet the world on a fairly steady basis. Let's be really ambitious. On a steady basis from a place of love. This whole notion of sanctuary is very, very potent at this time in our shared evolution. It's extraordinarily potent for several reasons. One is that one of the characteristics of our 21st century, and I've spoken about this in other places and at other times, one of the characteristics of our 21st century life is that we have unprecedented numbers of people who are without a sanctuary, without a home, without a sense of belonging. And the sense of belonging is absolutely critical here. It is what we long for. It is what we long for when we long for a personal experience of love. That we would belong in a situation of love. It is what we long for when we yearn to belong spiritually. When I wrote my book, Seeking the Sacred, it's that seeking, that yearning, that longing for belonging that I'm describing. And at this very moment, it's extremely potent. Outwardly and inwardly. So we have literally millions of people on our planet who are not being welcomed wholeheartedly into the human family, who are being told that they are other and unwanted. This is a travesty of all that we could call ethical behavior. It's a travesty. At the very same time, and here we might recognize our own stories a little bit more closely, at the same time, we have untold millions of people who are feeling spiritually homeless, spiritually bereft, spiritually unnourished, spiritually unloved. We are in an enormously vibrant but challenging transition period from the time when people could feel self-evidently at home in the religion of their birth. And now, when people need much more consciously to make choices, to make decisions about what will nourish them inwardly and therefore how they will move through this world. These are huge, wonderful, daunting, exhilarating challenges for us to think about, aren't they? And truly, we can only think about them together. We are experiencing this very individually. It's reminding us in difficult ways, often, of our loneliness. And it's also forcing us to consider with some real intelligence, with some uncompromised intelligence, about the truth of our interbeing. That when we exclude others from the human family in one way or another, either through religious bigotry or racial bigotry or gender bigotry or forbidding people to find a safe haven or a home. When we do that, we are denying the truth of our interbeing. When we return to the sanctuary of love, which is just another way of talking about the knowledge of who and what you actually are, beyond all the familiar identities, beyond the familiar identity of nationality, beyond the familiar identity of your profession, beyond the familiar identity of your relationships or your sexuality or your religion, beyond all that, there is an identity that we all share. In fact, there's a double identity that we all share, every one of us, whether or not we claim it. And that is the identity of our human life as an expression of our eternal self. Such a beautiful, beautiful way to describe this, and I bring it every time I teach, coming from George Fox in his great simplicity. George Fox, founding Quaker, founding of the Religious Society of Friends. And that word friends is so powerful here, because if we could just treat one another as friends, if we could even treat ourselves as a friend, so much of the unnecessary suffering in this world would truly fall away. So that these band of religious radicals who in a radical way stood up for friendship in the 16th and 17th centuries particularly, and who said, we're not going to have any priests, we're not going to have any people in authority between us and God. We don't need that. We can have a direct relationship from this soul to the soul of souls. What a radical thing that was. And what a very brave thing that was when the hierarchy of the churches were the authority that people actually trembled in front of. To say no. We're all walking this together. We can be friends. Also at a time, and in this way like this time, when people thought that they could actually solve problems, human problems, social problems, by going to war against one another, and far from calling others friends, calling them enemies. Even though the person who is your enemy today might become your friend tomorrow and might have been your friend yesterday. So by any measure, it's completely illogical, completely irrational, but it is also devastating to the human spirit. So from a place of cooperation and healing, George Fox said, speaking from the sanctuary of love, walk lightly on this earth. I do love that bit too. Walk lightly on this earth. When we walk lightly, of course, we walk appreciatively. And appreciation is so much part of what I'm going to be talking about with you every single day that we're together. Walk lightly on this earth, answering that of God in everyone. This is a profoundly healing description, acknowledgement, bow to, blessing for, realization that there is that of God in everyone, however you name it. You might name it soul, you might name it spirit, you might name it Buddha nature, but it is what we are. Beyond the familiar personality, beyond the precious body, beyond the habits of mind, beyond the defenses, beyond the offenses, beyond the talents, beyond the good wishes, we are also that of God. And when we think about the sanctuary of love, when we think about that place of refuge, when we think about that place of wholeness and healing and holiness, this is not a place that we go to in order to hide. It's a place that we go to in order to nourish ourselves so that we can engage more fully with the realization that the sanctuary of love is not only within our own hearts. It is the all of the all. So in other words, what I am talking about today when I talk about the sanctuary of life, is the sanctuary of life. When I talk about the sanctuary of love, I am talking about making life holy. Come to me, all you who struggle and are burdened. Come to me, said Jesus, that beautiful teacher of inclusion and compassion. Come to me, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke and learn from my example. In me you will find courage and humility of heart. And those are the qualities that we are also completely free to cultivate. Courage. It takes courage, actually, to find humility of heart. In the deepest reaches of your souls, you will find rest. This is very profound. We often go to the mind for solutions. Our minds are very well exercised, but actually, the part of the mind that is best exercised may not be the part of the mind that is most inclined to give us rest. It may be the part of the mind that is most inclined to worry at things, to want something like a solution, something like an answer. That part of the mind is our friend because it allows us to call upon the great experiences that we have had and to really use them and to generate from them some big pot of wisdom for the moment in which we now find ourselves. But when we need to rest, which is itself an act of trust, when we need to let the mind rest, when we need to acknowledge that we are not going to deal with all our personal dilemmas or the world's dilemmas or our shared dilemmas only with the gifts of the mind, we bring them to the place of the soul, which is another way of talking about the sanctuary of love. So we already see that we are talking about it from the place of foreground, background, and all ground. We are speaking about it also as the ground of being. And for some people, that is the name for God, ground of being, source of all. And it is the ground of our being. And when I wrote Intimacy and Solitude those years ago, which was a profoundly important book for me to write in the sense of really training myself in courage and humility, because who would take on those topics, really? You had to be kind of audacious, bold, beyond your own imagination. But there was a lovely phrase that I found when I was writing the section about the self, which took me 3.5 years to write. And I'm an impatient person. I would like you to know that. I am an impatient person. I've had to spend lifetimes, including this one, trying to learn patience. 3.5 years, thinking, what is the self? And at the time I wrote that, I had a very clear picture of what the self is at the personality level, and I had the beginnings of an understanding of what the self is at the level of soul. But I did have some understanding. But there was a lovely phrase from a Jungian analyst, a very early Jungian analyst, who was trained by Carl Jung and worked with him. And her name was Marie-Louise von Franz. And she said of the self, a feeling of solid ground within. And I really like that, because what we're talking about, I can't place it here on the altar for you to look at. But what I can do is to remind you of your own experiences of it and how different it is when we feel that we are on safe ground inwardly and when we feel we are bobbing around like a cork on the ocean. Not even like on the raft on the ocean, but that we are the cork on the ocean, but that the cork might sink. So this feeling of returning to the ground of being, returning to the ground of self, grounding our fears, grounding our anxieties, giving over what we need to give over to a wisdom far greater than our own, far greater than our well-trained, well-disciplined minds. In the deepest reaches of your souls, you will find rest. In the deepest reaches of your souls, you will find rest. And the wonderful thing is that we can reach those deepest reaches simply by reaching. And the reaching is done by remembering. The deepest reaches of the soul, like the sanctuary of love, like the remembrance of who and what you are, this divine being, this eternal self, this soul, taking this precious human existence. We can do all of this through the act of remembering. So everything that I will bring you on this retreat, everything that you will bring to yourselves, everything that you will bring to one another, whether it's the kindness with which you were received into this physical place of mana, whether it is the beauty of these buildings that have been prepared for you, whether it is the beauty of the physical landscape, whether it is the deliciousness of the food, whether it is the kindness of gesture, whether it is the person who looks at you for a moment longer than is necessary and acknowledges your lovely presence here. Whatever it is, Whatever it is, it's a reminder, and it allows you to remember this infinite resource that you have within yourself. And I know that I can speak for all of you when I speak for myself, that my most desolate times, my most despairing times, my most desperate times are when, rather than remembering, I am forgetting. So the gift of a retreat, the gift of a retreat and the gift of listening to a talk such as this one is that it is a call to remembering. It is a call to remembering your resources, your willingness to trust, your willingness perhaps also to surrender your reliance upon your own fragility. Your fragility serves you very well. Your fragility serves you as best it can. And there are moments in which it is not enough. And I want to tell you a story which is familiar to some of you, but I want to tell it to you in a different way. Because we are all evolving, every one of us, which is why we can go back to a familiar passage over and over again and find something fresh in it, because we haven't heard it on this day. And this familiar story is particularly precious because it began at Mana. I used it in seeking the sacred, and I have come to understand it differently very recently. And the story belongs in an Easter retreat some years ago. We were fewer people at that retreat, and we sat in a big circle around. And I think it was Saturday. So we'd already had Friday together and Thursday evening, and maybe we'd had a good bit of Saturday together too. I can't quite remember. And there was a young woman on the retreat whom I knew well because she'd been on previous retreats with us. And she said something in one of the periods of discussion that was quite self-disparaging. Now, there isn't a single one of us in this room who doesn't say sometimes things about ourselves, particularly inwardly, that are not somewhat self-disparaging. Sometimes they're even violent. Sometimes they are unloving. Sometimes they are disrespectful. So this was a very mild version. But nevertheless, I felt the pain in it. And I went and stood in front of her. Her name is Kirsten. And just in one of those inspired moments that is available to all of us, it's available to all of us. It's not just something special for me because this is my life. It's something special to all of us because this is your life. And I stood in front of her and I said to her, Kirsten, you are enough. Because I recognized that in that moment, she was entirely forgetting that she was enough. She was flooded with her feelings of insufficiency. And we are often flooded with our feelings of insufficiency. And oddly, paradoxically almost, the more awake we are and the more attuned we are to the healing that the world needs and its creatures, including the creatures that we call human beings, the more attuned we are to that, sometimes the more helpless we can feel. When we let go some of our defenses against the suffering in this world, we can feel very helpless. We can feel very not enough. So this was a moment of communion when I stood in front of Kirsten and said, "You are enough." And then I asked everybody to stand and walked around very, very slowly, because we are in the timeless zone, as I said yesterday evening here on retreat. We are in the space of timelessness. So whether I have prepared whatever I've prepared, I might get to it or I might not, and so what? So I moved slowly around the room and said to each person in turn, reading their names, "You are enough." And of course, by the end of it, we were all weeping for all the times that we had not been enough, for every minute in our lives, in some of our cases, when we had felt shamed or disappointing or disappointed or rebuked or disrespected or unacknowledged or unappreciated or unloved, or rejected, that we were not enough for another, or that we were not enough for ourselves. Or God help us, some of us have also been told rather firmly that we were not enough for God either. That we would have to make strenuous efforts to be remotely enough for God. Total travesty. So there was a lot of healing on that day. But what I've come to really feel and feel my way towards through my own struggles with not enoughness, my still alive tendencies, for example, to wonder if I could be humiliated rather than just choosing humility. If my inadequacies would override my adequacies, all of those very painful, if I would feel really chosen in one situation or another. If I would be seen through the eyes of love, or see myself through the eyes of love. These are all questions that come alive every time we have the courage to reveal to ourselves a new stage of vulnerability. It takes courage to be vulnerable. It takes great courage to be vulnerable and to step outside the known and to embrace the unknown and the evolving and the unfolding. In that experiencing, I also realized, and you've probably realized it already yourselves, but it took me a lot of realizing, that at the level of personality, at the level of ego, at the level of well-trained, conditioned mind, we are not enough. Actually, it's true. We are not enough. We are not enough. Because the conditioned mind undermines us. But the conditioned mind is also the instrument that takes us to this placeless place of soul and spirit, where we are already chosen, where we are already enough, where we are, it is said, made in the image of the divine. How could that not be enough? How could that not be enough? How could that not be enough? So if you think of the conditioned mind, if you think of your rational mind, if you think of your power of thinking, if you think of your power of prayer, if you think of your power of meditation, if you think of your powers of kindness, of soothing, of encouraging, of illuminating, if you think of all those powers that you have, they can very gently and instantly remind you of the place from which you can meet your sorrows, from which you can more fully embrace your joys, from which you can more marvelously express your joy, your consolation, your inquiry, your curiosity, your happiness, your well-being. From that place, which is placeless, which no one owns and which we all have, which we share, which belongs to all of us and to no one. It is what we honor when we look into the eyes of another person. It is what we honor when we put our hands together at our hearts and bow deeply to this wondrous gift that we call life, which is, of course, the gift not of this life only. It is the gift of eternal life. Which is why we can bow with as much gratitude to those who are no longer in the body or who are yet to be born, as we do to those who are in the body at this fleeting time. We are bowing to what is eternal. We are bowing to what is infinitely and unceasingly loving. And not just to that of God, but also to the source, to the ground of being, to the mystery. There's also another lovely story, and we'll take a few minutes break when I've told this story. It's another lovely story that is familiar to some of you also, and that I read and reread and retell myself often. And I sometimes tell it to myself when I'm preparing for something that is challenging. And I sometimes tell it to myself in those most private moments of 3 o'clock or 4 o'clock wakening. And I tell it in seeking the sacred because it so amply reveals the sacred to us. The sacredness of your life, the sacredness of my life, the abundance of that, the healingness of that, the power in that to meet the suffering, the power in that also to refrain from the causing of suffering. And I'll tell you just a little bit about the person who told this story, because it's Thomas Merton, who was a monk and an intellectual. And although he was a Trappist monk and therefore gave his life to contemplation, he also had all the gifts and all the drawbacks of a highly conditioned, highly trained intellect. He had the gifts of it and the drawbacks. In other words, one can rest too much on that mind. So that I just want to tell you that because it makes this story so lovely. And he tells the story of standing, funnily enough, Thomas Merton, not so funnily, quite wonderfully, his physical lineage includes New Zealand because his father was a New Zealander. He was born in France and he lived most of his life in a monastery in Kentucky. But his physical lineage was partly from this amazing land of New Zealand. I think that's very lovely. I'm sure it helped him. And he had a lot of sorrow also in his life, and I'm absolutely sure that that helped him to grow in compassion and understanding of what we call the human condition. So there was this intellectual man, very, very well known Catholic monk and writer, who nevertheless became hugely interested in Eastern teachings, particularly in Hinduism and Buddhism. He really wanted to learn Eastern practices of meditation as well as Western practices of contemplation, which is one of the reasons, only one of the reasons, why I love him so much. So here we are in 1958. Some of you were not yet in the body, in this body. Some of us had already been in the body for a while. So it was 1958 in Kentucky, a place where actually there's quite a lot of bigotry. And that bigotry is not unknown to us either. A lot of division between people on the basis of race, gender, religion, and sexuality. It's good to hold that in mind too. So there he was, standing on the corner of 4th and Walnut. You know how in American cities they have numbers and they have names, and it's so lovely. It gives rise to such poetry. There I was, standing on the corner of 4th and Walnut, says Thomas Merton, who was quite a poet. He was a poet also. And suddenly, and quite unexpectedly, he saw that despite all our human idiocies, some of us have quite a few. I don't know about you. I have quite a few. Despite all our failings, despite our missteps, despite our ignorance, he was able, in this moment of exceptional illumination, suddenly to see that everyone, without exception, all around him on this busy street, was shining like the sun. In other words, do you need other words? I'm not sure. In other words, he had a moment of utterly pure soul consciousness. Mm-hmm. He was able to see who you are. When we have our meditations in the mornings, I invite you, and I will invite you each day that you're here, towards the end of the guided period, to see yourself with unconditional acceptance, to see yourself with unconditional appreciation, to see yourself with unconditional love. It's a big stretch for many of us. But how will we begin to accept others? How will we begin to tolerate others unless we can also, in the deepest meaning of the word, tolerate and accept and cherish ourselves, which has nothing whatsoever to do with selfishness or self-absorption. On the contrary, it's very freeing, and I'll talk more about that after our short break. But it is also an acknowledgement that this life of yours is a gift. It's a gift. It's not something just to be taken for granted, nor is it something just to be complained about, pushed into shape. Actually, I can guarantee you a facelift here at Mana. I can absolutely guarantee you a facelift. I can absolutely guarantee that you will leave this place with a lifted face because you will have a lifted heart. Yeah. And why will you have a lifted heart? Because you will have been in the presence of unqualified kindness. And much of that kindness must be generated from within. This is our spiritual opportunity. It is also our spiritual responsibility to generate kindness from within so that we can truly see that for all the things that may dismay us, we are in essence shining like the sun. Om Shanti.